Radio 314 on the Red Ice Radio Network.
This is Lana. Thanks for being here. Today we'll be speaking with Gary Evans. Gary has been studying Earth mysteries for a number of years. His keen interest in an unfamiliar chapter of prehistory before Sumeria has led to the website AtlantisEvidence.com and various lectures around the UK and Egypt. He's the PR agent for a number of best-selling alternative authors and helps to promote conferences such as CPAC, Awaken Aware in the US, and Megalithomania. When not working on conferences, he's organizing and running tours to Egypt, Peru, Bolivia, Stonehenge, and other sacred sites. Hi, Gary. How are you?
Hi, Lana. Yeah, thanks for having me on the show. Good to hear your voice at last.
Yes, it's good to finally speak with you, as you and I have worked together coordinating many guests for Red Ice.
We have probably over 20 by my calculations.
So how many people are you representing these days?
Well, it's a difficult question to answer because I'm working with probably 50 plus authors, but in various different capacities. So it depends how you measure it. But directly, probably 15 to 20.
Wow. Wow. So what are your days like? Is this pretty much all consuming for you?
Yes. And something we'll probably talk about later is doing what you love. So rather than it being a drain, the days are so exciting that I never want them to end. So yeah, I've had a busy week working on tours this week to Peru, lots of tours coming up in Egypt, England, Ireland, Malta next year, because I'm co-hosting quite a few.
Wow. So where does your drive, your energy come from?
Well, I kind of have phases, what I would call office time, when I'm at home booking lots of media interviews for all my clients and preparing tours and working out the best ways to inspire people on the tours, because it's really something a bit deeper than just going and visiting.
Yeah, sure.
Sites. And I always get a lot of buzz going on when I'm talking to radio show hosts and magazine editors, TV producers, because I get to discuss my passions with them and more often than not share experiences, and then they tell me they've experienced similar things so we can compare notes. Mm-hmm. So the pictures, yeah, coming together nicely. So it's all entwined what I'm doing. My personal research is connected to all of the trips and the radio show hosts I book my clients in, because I get to know them personally and develop friendships and then visit them and travel around the world. So it's all very nicely interconnected, which definitely is making life a lot of fun.
And you also just returned from the USA, right? So how did it feel on an energetic level compared to Europe?
Well, I've just got back from the West End and then stopped by New York. And I spent 10 weeks in the US and Peru at the end of last year. So I kind of got used to the US last year and always enjoy being there. I mean, I am fortunate in that I get to spend time with people that are trying to inspire others and running events and sort of putting our heads together and trying to move things forwards, really, because we got to a certain point with the, you could call it the alternative movement, by acting and media in a certain way. But how do we get to the next step? How are we going to start making significant changes to the planet for the better? How are people going to start tuning into these things and doing what they love? So those are the kind of meetings I've just got back from. So it was, yeah, fantastic trip, and I got to see the sun.
I hope the American people treated you nicely.
Yes, I think their hospitality is second to none.
Yeah, we still try and say please and thank you and excuse me, which I hope never dies.
No, we definitely like that in England.
Now, you also went to James Gilliland's Esedi Ranch. So did you see anything there?
I did, because I've been booking in some of my clients on James's radio show. So I've got to know his producer, Nate, who's a great guy. So I flew up to Oregon and Nate picked me up. And I also knew about quite a few people in the media that had been up there. And they said, you've got to go because this place is incredible. And these were people that I trusted. So I thought, right, let's try and fit this into the trip and see what we can find out. I mean, is there really something tangible happening there? And yeah, I would say that there is definitely something happening there. I mean, I saw some strange things in the sky. I wouldn't say there was anything conclusive. We kept calling for the mothership, but it didn't land in the field, just to clear it up for me.
Oh. Yeah, we were there. Actually, my parents went too, and Henrik and I, and we wore the night goggles, and we saw quite a bit there. Lots of light orbs flying around, and we heard something really strange out in the woods too.
All right.
Yeah, maybe it was Bigfoot, because I know he's up there in the Pacific Northwest hanging around.
Could be. well, I think the best thing about James's ranch was the people that he'd attracted to him. I don't think I've ever been in the company of so many guys that are so heart-based. So it was a really nice sharing. Everyone kind of had their jobs around the ranch, and all just, it was effortless. So we had a fantastic time, lots of sharing, lots of ideas flowing. So I'm definitely going to return as soon as possible, and would recommend anyone that's ever thought of going there. I think they'll have a great time if they do.
Yeah, I would recommend that too. So you also did some sort of a lecture there, and you were discussing spiritual reconnection. And this is something that I wanted to discuss with you today. So I thought maybe we can begin with defining what spiritual connection means.
Okay. Yeah, well, I ended up giving a 3.5-hour lecture at James's, because a lot of these subjects are very complicated, and you want to try and express it in a way that different people understand the point you're trying to make. So I'll just try and condense things a bit today.
Sure.
And get to the really juicy bits. Approach.
So how did we lose our connection with the universe and with God?
Well, what I'm looking at is the sort of modern way of life compared to these ancient societies. And you've interviewed Lucy Wyatt. Henrik's spoken to her a couple of times. And it's not about going back to the Stone Age. It's about how can we live and work in a more harmonious way with the planet and each other. So taking the best bits of what we used to be and integrating it into something that's more realistic. And cities are certainly responsible for cutting a lot of people off, I think, from the natural environment, because that's where I would say I sort of charge my soul by spending time in nature.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very easy way that anyone that's living in a city can just get out more. Forests are wonderful. Beaches, lots of negative ions, if people know about those, generated by the sea and waterfalls. So these are places we can sort of tap into our intuition more if we're trying to work out what to do with our lives. And another thing that I really like to do is bare feet on the ground.
I love that too.
And it's just, it feels good for a start. So that's one good reason to do it. But it's also another good way of getting rid of stress. We've had a busy day, and you can get a charge of energy once you've sort of sensitized yourself, which we can hopefully discuss a bit. That ties into the spiritual connection side of it. Then I think people start getting addicted to it, as I do. So I go out every day, just have my bare feet and spend some time in nature. And I've been kind of running an experiment on it for my research, because it's the time spent in nature and sort of tuning into the world around us that you can then use at these ancient sites to get some quite profound epiphanies.
Right.
So what we're really talking about is a kind of a two-part process where we work on ourself and our consciousness to a higher vibration. It's probably the normal term. And then you take yourself to these ancient sites, and then they become, it's a two-way process, rather than just you going there and saying, oh, well, that's wonderful, and taking a photograph. There's some kind of interaction that starts happening once your consciousness is more aware of the world around you, and that's when these places can really start talking to you.
And you're saying the energy is still really strong today, even in the ancient sites?
Many of them. And that's, in fact, what I'm working on at the moment is a list of ancient sites around the world that I would call are still working to various degrees. And certainly in intact structures like the Great Pyramid, which I think we'll probably discuss later, are very powerful still. There's no doubt about it. If we've got the ears to listen, then they're quite capable of talking to us still. So I'm working on a list of what you could call power places around the planet, and you have to visit them in person. Really so important.
Yeah, I would agree. I have traveled to many of the high places, and it's life-changing.
Mm.
Is it possible that not all of us had that connection even in ancient times?
Well, there's lots of theories about, you could say, young souls or people that have just incarnated here. But I think they're different places. It's not like everybody needs to go to Egypt. I don't think that's how the system's going to work. And that's why I'm trying to look at it from a worldwide perspective. But different places can talk to different people in different ways. And this, I mean, they're just so powerful. I think once anyone's got a bit of sensitivity to these things going, they're certainly capable of getting some kind of hit. I call it seeing the magic.
That's right. It's also plausible that some people may be disconnected from God, the source, because of maybe certain behavior in another existence or a past life. What would you say about that?
My understanding, and I did have a bit of an epiphany about it, was that I know a lot of people like to look into past lives and things, but the way that the system was shown to me was that we come down here with a clean slate. This is why we don't remember past lives, because there's too much trauma and things to cope with in this life. So you really don't want to be remembering everything that happened before. So I try and stay away from going into that side of things too much. So it's more about, my research is releasing what's happened to us in this lifetime. And that's why I've got all these sort of different methods that I'm now working with. And yoga is certainly a very powerful tool that can help many people, and sound healings, I think we talk about. So it's more of working on what we've been doing in this life, releasing blockages. And I think what we really need to do, if we're looking at a consciousness shift happening around the planet, which is a popular subject this year, well, what does that mean? And to me, that means moving from a fear-based consciousness, where we sort of stop ourselves doing things that we love because of what ifs. What if this happens? Well, I've sort of dismissed that way of doing things, because normally they don't happen. And what happens instead is that you have a fantastic experience and meet some great people. So we've got to move from this kind of fear-based way of looking at the world up into the, and you call it the heart. I call it heart-based consciousness, or being centered in our meridian or chakra system is the Eastern term for it. And once you're in a sort of heart space and thinking of others, becoming more aware of others, not necessarily putting yourself first all the time, that's when life gets a bit more exciting.
Do you think everyone has a destiny, or is that something that we each create on our own?
I think we come down here with a purpose. We certainly come down here with something that were big things that we wanted to do, or lessons to learn. There was a book title that I normally like to reference, and it was called A School Called Earth. So from that perspective, there's certainly things to learn. And as we begin to free our mind from the constraints that we've been put in, that's certainly how it felt to me, with a sort of normal view of the world, is a very restrictive view. So you need to sort of free your mind a bit more to greater possibilities. So that would be my take on it.
I like to ask a lot of people this, but I want to get your take. So do you think we're stuck in the matrix?
No. No, I don't think so. The Matrix, I watched it recently with a couple of friends in the States, and it's definitely a very good analogy. There are a lot of people, I would say, stuck in there still. And the kind I was starting to see when I was looking at it recently was the people in the pods that are in the kind of human farm is almost like people in cubicles in an office.
Mm-hmm.
But their minds are just in this small little box. And so you get onto this kind of treadmill. And I mean, I've been there. I spent a long time there, and I just started to feel that it was soul destroying. So we need some kind of practical way of getting people from that situation, because that obviously pays the bills, into a situation where they can do what they love, and that also pays the bills. So I've got quite a few thoughts on that.
Share them.
Project. And but it's the sort of practical basis that I've come up with is, it's not a good idea to obviously just throw your job in if you've got a rent and children to support. So I think the sort of practical way of going about things is, if there's something that you've really got a strong passion about that you'd love to do, is to research that, first of all, in the small amount of time that you've got available, and then go about a good way of making it something more concrete. So you slowly start to evolve your own business, or perhaps, I mean, some people don't want to work by themselves, so there might be a friend, or perhaps you can connect with somebody across the internet, so you could form a partnership, and then you've got somebody to work with. Because a lot of the projects I work on are collaborations, because we've all got our different strengths.
That's right.
always good to have a partner, and you and Henrik have obviously formed a very strong partnership doing the wonderful work you guys are doing.
That's right.
But of course, it can be a few men or ladies. It doesn't have to be one of each sex. But then start to expand it. I like to set myself small, medium, and long-term goals for all my projects. So just start off something with a kind of a minimum risk, and then gradually try and expand it. And make sure that you're really doing everything possible. I think this is one of the lessons I've learned, and that your intuition might talk to you and give you an idea that you think, well, that's such a long shot that that's never going to happen. Those thoughts can quite often be the ones that really set things into motion. So you've got to do everything you can possibly think of, because there's normally nothing to lose and everything to gain.
That's right.
And determination and willpower, that was how I started my PR company. I was absolutely determined. There was no way that I was failing. I had to make it happen. And out of that came the company, because I was just so determined. So you need to really work on your willpower and do everything you can. And then hopefully, over time, you can slowly build up something that will eventually turn into a business that replaces the job that perhaps you're not enjoying so much.
Do you also think that if there's a changing paradigm happening right now, that some jobs are going to become outdated and other new jobs will arise? Because there's a lot of crappy jobs right now that require just a real low level of consciousness.
Yes. Yeah, mind numbing. Well, I always used to, when I was in the office world, get bored, very bored with things after a year or 18 months. And I just couldn't see how I could do the same thing for ages. And I hope with the consciousness shift that's happening, and there is definitely something happening, I'm confident enough to say that. It's not all just sort of woo-woo or talk. The internet is the big reason for it, because it's enabling like-minded souls to find each other all around the planet, share ideas, and the information flow and speed of events now compared to 20 years ago. I mean, it's just tremendous. What we accomplish in a few months would have taken years before. So there's certainly something happening on the planet. And there's a lot of people, I feel fortunate to know many of them, that have got the same goal of moving into a more sustainable way of being, because it's quite clear that we can't go on with our old bad habits and lack of respect for the environment. I mean, that's one of my big motivational things.
Well, and the other part of that is, if you work at one of those companies, quit. don't support it. Don't be a slave to that. And I think the universe will reward you, and other doors will open up. So it's about not being such a chicken and taking a risk. You know, I hear so many people complaining in their jobs and complaining all the time. It's like, well, then do something about it.
Well, that's it. Yeah, we've got to act now. The point of waiting for somebody else to fix the problems that we see, I think we went past that. We went past that a few years ago. It was when I decided to step out of the shadows. We've got to take responsibility for ourselves, and if there's something that we feel strongly about, we've got to try and do something about it. It's no good just sitting on the sidelines anymore.
So how would one go about finding what is their destiny? Let's say they have no clue. There's nothing that really inspires them. They're not really activated into that yet, in that part of themselves. How would they go about awakening their own self to find their life path?
Well, that's where perhaps some of the experiences that the ancient sites I've had could help. Because I certainly feel that my travels have allowed me to find myself more, and something that's an ongoing process. I think there's still a lot more that I can learn. But yeah, getting in touch with yourself, which is part of the spiritual reconnection theme, and developing our intuition. And I believe it's a skill that everybody has. It's generally credited to ladies because they're perhaps a bit more sensitive, because men are told, oh, we're supposed to be the kind of harder of the two. But actually, if you increase your sensitivity, it does get to a point where it provides you with a huge amount of strength. So it's a bit of an oxymoron when men are thinking about being sensitive, because actually they'd be even stronger if they kind of go down that road.
Right.
What my experience has told me. So developing your intuition, which yoga, I mean, it's just helped me in a tremendous way. So I came out of my second yoga class a completely different man, because I'd built up all of this, whatever, it was stress, depression, because I wasn't doing something that I loved, and there was anger in there. And the yoga is a good way to release it. So if people find themselves in stressful situations or around people that are angry, you've really got to work on a way to keep yourself cleansed.
So do you think that that's mostly a physical thing? Because I think some people, they think that yoga is almost a spiritual experience when really it's a physical release that happens. What do you think?
Yes. Yeah. Well, my yoga teacher attributes the stress and sort of anger building up in the liver and kidneys. So we do a lot of stretches and poses that put pressure on that area. And it just feels really good. So I think she's probably right with that idea, because when you get stressed, you get this kind of tight feeling in your stomach, and sometimes people get terrible pain if they've had a build-up of stress. So there needs to be some way of releasing that. And the idea, if we say, oh, well, that person's an angry person, I'm not a subscriber to that anymore. That person's got a lot of anger about things, maybe terrible things that they've had to endure, but they want to work through it on some level. So you've slowly got to get in tune with yourself and let go of things. And it's the same for the heart. When we have relationships and we form attachments to people, and we end up perhaps disappointed, and then we feel this hurt. So we hold on to this feeling, but it's no good for us. We've got to try and let go of these things. And it's an ongoing process if it was somebody that meant a lot to us. So we've got to keep finding different ways to gradually sort of peel back these layers like an onion skin and let go of things, so we're more free to love again and move forwards in a positive light.
That's right. And I think that's another reason why people are probably getting so sick in our world. They're stressed and they have all these unresolved issues, and so it just implodes inside the body.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, they didn't teach many of these things at school. So I've had to go out into the world and try and find out what different people are doing to help themselves, and then try these things. Is there a tangible effect? Because there's lots of things out there when you start looking into it. But what can really help people, and what's something I'd kind of call fluffy that's not particularly effective? And I'm trying to get a list of things that we can implement into our daily lives, like nutrition's a huge part of that, the water we drink, meditation time, so we can just have a bit of time to ourselves is also important. So there's lots of different things that we can do, and different people resonate to different areas. So I'm working on a book. It's just going to be a small sort of practical guide about spiritual reconnection and positive steps that we can implement with pretty minimum effort as well.
So what was your waking up process like? When did you come into a lot of these topics or spirituality in general? Did you grow up around it or did this come later?
No, I didn't grow up around it. In fact, I felt very isolated. Just had a couple of friends that I could kind of talk to. But I had various what I would call awakenings. There was a big one at 17 and I ended up going out to the local libraries once I'd suddenly realised that life was a bit more interesting than I'd been taught at school. And I'd get 10 books out of one library and that was the maximum. So I'd go over to the next library and get another 10 books out. And it was at that point I found Robert Bovall and Graham Hancock's writings, who I'm now feel very fortunate to count amongst my friends and clients, because they were some of my original inspirers almost 20 years ago now. So I kind of had these points where I'd absorb a lot of information and then perhaps sort of go back to a more sleepy state of consciousness and work in an office trying to find my way in the world. And then about 3 years ago, my intuition said, go to yoga. And thankfully, I started listening to it by that point. And that was where the real big shift happened. I started the PR company, traveling around the world, which led me to these amazing experiences in Egypt, helping to run tours in Egypt, sharing group experiences with people. And at that point, I started to find out about sound and the effects of sound on our consciousness, because I'm more of into the experiential side now. Left brain kind of information gets us to a certain point, but if somebody's trying to work on themselves, they've really got to have some kind of experience so it becomes a bit more tangible. And this is why I'm working on so many conferences around the world, which provides an opportunity not only to meet the authors that people love, but be in the company of other like-minded souls. I mean, many of these conferences that I've had the privilege of working on feels like the spiritual family coming back into one place. And this was one of the most empowering things that happened to me in 2010 when I went to my first conference, Megalithomania in Glastonbury. And before that, I'd been the sort of what I call the armchair investigator. I had interests in the mysteries of life and ancient civilizations, but I was sort of viewing it from afar. And once I was in the company of all these other people in Glastonbury, suddenly I had friends to talk to that had read the same books, watched the same documentaries, been to the same places. And the isolated Gary that felt very alone and sad about things, suddenly I had all these amazing people to discuss my passions with. And it was an incredibly empowering feeling. So I'd certainly encourage people, if they've ever thought about going to conferences, it can be life-changing.
Yeah, you can meet some great people there as well.
Yeah.
Friends, girlfriend, whatever.
You can certainly meet partners there. Some of my clients have met their wives and husbands at conferences, perhaps both of them doing talks and things. Certainly get some like-minded friends. And that could be another way of getting some of these businesses I was discussing off the ground. People with the same passions that have been thinking. I mean, just lots of synchronicities happen at events. You just end up finding the right person at the right time. So there can be tremendous opportunities.
So how does one begin to attain a higher level of consciousness? If it's something that they're desiring right now, I mean, how do you begin that process?
Well, different people say obviously need different things. We've already touched upon a few things. I certainly think moving a diet away from junk food and lots of meat. I mean, I'm still what I call a carnivore, but have shifted my diet heavily in a vegetarian direction. And it definitely gives you a clearer level of consciousness.
I tried that too, and I did for a time, and then I just became very weak. And I didn't have any energy.
Yeah, so I'm more of a subscriber to the get a good healthy diet going, but don't cut out everything that you love. There's no point in going from one extreme to the other. And I think that can put people off. It's like, well, I like chocolate ice cream, so I'm still going to enjoy my chocolate ice cream. But I'm also going to have a good amount of veggies in the day and make my green juice so it's balanced out. And that's more realistic, I think, for people that have got busy lives. Yeah, so that and the water quality. Ancient sites is definitely a way that I've found that we can really reach people, these power places around the planet.
And how does that work? You go there and it just basically activates you? Or what's the inner working process when you go to a sacred site?
Well, let's discuss one example, which I think really kind of cuts to the heart of it. And that's Luxor Temple in Egypt, which is one of my very favorite places because it's so powerful there. And well, we talk about it in terms of energy present, but the state of consciousness in Egypt, I would say, is a higher vibration than Europe and the US overall. It definitely feels different there. You see an extra little twinkle in people's eyes, even the cats and things look a bit more awake. And so you've already got a sort of a higher vibration. And then you go into one of these temples and they're just incredible. These huge obelisks sitting at the entrance with these 30 to 40 feet tall statues. And one thing that I think perhaps a bit misunderstood about Egypt, even at the entrance to Egypt, the temple of Abu Simbel, you've got these huge statues, but when you look at the expressions on their face, it's just ever so peaceful, and they've got their hands resting on their knees, and it's almost like they're meditating. So it really gives you this sort of peaceful feeling when you're there on the ground. It's not a sort of warlike feel to it at all. It's a complete opposite. And one of the things that I'd noticed in the temples in Egypt, because I was walking through barefooted, was that where they've put ramps or steps in, that there was a lot more energy in the ground at the top of the ramp to the bottom. So it seemed like they were symbolizing on the ground with a ramp where there was a higher energy present at the top. So I was walking through Luxor Temple with a good friend of mine, and we walked up. There's a huge ramp, and then there's a courtyard following it with all these amazing statues. And it was at night time, so it's all lit up beautifully in these yellow lights. And it's just a magical place. And so we got to the top of this ramp, and I said to my friend, well, here's this is the biggest ramp out of any of the temples that I've come across. I said, well, this is a good place to see what we can feel coming in through our feet, because there's this huge ramp there, so it should be marking a difference in the level of consciousness that's available. So she said, okay. So he's standing at the top of the ramp, and the important thing is that you're actually stopping, and then you're reaching out, so you're sensing what's around you, because this is something that a lot of us don't do. We're busy and we just run past things. So just stopping and feeling what's present is a big part of this process, and then allowing yourself to open up to what's available. So we did this, and instantly I felt this huge energy rushing in through my feet, up my legs. And I was looking at my hand, and the in between the crease of the thumb and forefinger had started to twitch because there was so much energy coming into my body. And I was thinking to myself, wow, is there really so much energy coming into my body that's making my hand twitch? And as I was thinking that, my friend says to me, wow, there's so much energy coming into my body, my hand's twitching. It's like, huh. Okay, so maybe this isn't just all in my head and there's something tangible here. And that's one of the things that I've been enjoying, is when you're running tours, that you can share these experiences with different people and get their perspectives. So it's not just delusional Gary going off into one. Something that we're sharing as a group. And so it makes it a lot more tangible. And then after the experience, because the normal rational thing to do is question the weird things that happen, and then you kind of talk yourself out of it. Oh, well, it wasn't quite so real as I was thinking. Perhaps I got a bit deluded.
I've been to some of these sites and soaked in some of the energy and actually experienced feeling a bit queasy or nauseous. Have you ever had that?
Well, I might be guilty of enjoying being a bit sort of heady sometimes. But I've certainly had experiences in the Great Pyramid where there was so much energy when I opened up to what was around me that I got scared by what was coming into my body and kind of had to talk myself into going with the flow of the experience. And I know that some of my friends have had to leave temples if they've, because it can be quite emotional. It can bring things up. There can be clearings that are happening. So I think it's important not to try and push yourself too fast, would be some advice.
Where does that energy come from?
Well, that's a big question. I was even talking to James Gilliland about it, because some of the temples have been moved in Egypt. So I've got various research and friends that work with ley lines and earth energies and things, but if they've actually moved a temple from its original location and it's still very powerful, then it would seem to suggest that there's something else going on as well. But earth energies are certainly a big part of many of the ancient sites. They seem to know sacred places, and I kind of liken it to a thinning of the veil. So normally there's the kind of the material world and the other side that we will all return to at some point before reincarnating. And at some of these ancient sites, the gap between those two worlds is a lot smaller than normal. So you can almost peer through the veil, and that's when some strange experiences are possibly going to happen.
So do you think it was designed that way by the gods, or do you think that it happened over time because of the people that were located on that piece of property?
Well, I think there were certainly lots of sensitive people around. They were more in tune with their environment, is something that we know, and that's a fairly obvious thing to suggest. They were more in tune with the natural world. They needed to go hunting. They needed to know the seasons for planting crops and things. And so they were probably sensitive to these places, much like the way that I'm starting to find out about, probably. And that's by just getting myself into a better place emotionally, physically, and from a nutritional point of view, that the sensitivity is growing. So you can tune in into these places, and then they probably develop some kind of technology to amplify these natural effects. I think geology has also got a lot to do with it, the rock strata. They could amplify the effects and use those effects for various different purposes. It's not like there's a one-size-fits-all explanation for all the ancient sites. I think there was lots of different purposes for them.
So what do you think happened? What happened in Egypt? Where did everyone go?
Well, from what we see, it started at a high point of what we probably call a spiritual understanding today, and gradually devolved over time. So that's could tie in with the yuga cycles of consciousness, which I've had a couple of clients on your show discussing, and the conference
that's right.
I just got back from. I mean, I like that idea. It does kind of explain why we've had these amazing civilizations that were dedicated to something a bit more than the latest new car. So that's certainly one good explanation. There's a kind of idea out there that we wanted to go into a sort of male-dominated left-brain society so that we could understand ourselves better. That's certainly one idea. But what's happening now is that we need to move away from the kind of male domination imposing ourselves on the world and interacting in a more harmonious way, which is what they were certainly doing in Egypt. And also the Stonehenge landscape, where I spend a lot of time, it's just covered in amazing sites all around the countryside in Wiltshire. And we'll be taking some people around there next year. So, and in America, there's these interesting sites up in New England. That's one of the next places on my list.
Yeah, me too. I haven't been over there.
Well, I've got a good tour guide over there that takes people around all the sites, because it does appear whoever the megalith builders were, they did make it at least to the east coast of the States, and there's certainly powerful places like Sedona that are worth visiting that can help people's consciousness expand. I had an amazing time there last year.
Yeah, Sedona is like a whole other place. You know, it's a city full of kind of new agey, spiritually open-minded people, which is kind of refreshing to be in.
There's definitely, like Glastonbury, different people get drawn there with different interests. From my perspective, it's got an amazing landscape. It's definitely what I would call an active landscape, which I think coincides with levels of awareness that you can tap into. I mean, I could feel it was going to be different from about 50 miles away before we even arrived. So there's definitely a connection between certain places on the planet, the geology, and our level of awareness. That's one of the conclusions that I've reached. So I'm starting to see patterns from my travels now. So it doesn't have to be people traveling thousands of miles or jumping on an aeroplane. They might have some of these places quite near to them that can help them on their journey. So it's certainly an area worth investigating.
So I wanted to also talk about spiritual progression with you, since we were on the topic of spiritual reconnection, because I find even in this field, you can absorb hours and hours of interesting podcasts and take in all kinds of information. But then there's a point when you kind of hit a ceiling and you're like, okay, now what's next? I've heard this, heard that, you know. So what do you do when you hit a wall in your progression?
Well, that's where the experiential side that I was mentioning comes into it. There's I would say that it's almost like little breadcrumbs in your mind. So you're putting these little breadcrumbs in to build up a path to an understanding, you could call it. But until you actually experience it, it does become real to you. It needs to be something tangible. And that's where the visiting these places and meeting other people and just reaching out, really. That's how I've accomplished a growing understanding, which is a constant process. I keep trying to find new things to do. It's not like you get to a certain point and go, that's it, enlightened, okay, I can go on holiday. And in fact, the more I've seen, the more I realise that there is to see. I mean, there's amazing things that I'd love to do with my life. And that's the reason that we probably have reincarnation. There's too many to do everything in this lifetime, so I need to come back and do a few different things in the next one. But there was one experience that I wanted to share with your listeners to try and paint a bit of a picture about where we can get to, because I think we're getting a little short on time. And that was, if we go back to Luxor Temple in Egypt, when we were feeling this energy flowing through our bodies. So we spent a little time tuning in there. But I already knew that there's the inner sanctum, some people call it the Holy of Holies, at the end of the temple. And that was one of the most powerful places in the temple. And the year before, when there was a normal level of tourism, there'd been about 30 or 40 people there. So I hadn't even been able to tune in. But this time it was slightly after the Egyptian Revolution, and when I walked into this chamber, there wasn't any tourists there whatsoever. So I sat down, and gradually the people that were kind of in our meditation group that I'd been leading, we'd had a few interesting experiences, and these people slowly filtered in, and we formed a circle and had a meditation there. And I'd already tuned into the effects of sound on our consciousness. If you vibrate the body using tones, it does help to lift your level of awareness and consciousness. So I was quite keen to implement some of the understandings that I'd had in the Great Pyramid in our little group in Luxor Temple. So I sort of slowly encouraged the group to start toning just very quietly to see if it was appropriate, and the group all started to join in, and we gradually raised the level of sound, and it does vibrate with the stone in Egypt. You get this kind of resonance effect. And what ended up happening was we had a group out of body experience. And when I was doing the talk for James in the US, I thought, well, perhaps I can make this a bit more real for people than just giving Gary's perspective. Because again, it's quite easy to be delusional sometimes. So I wrote to a couple of the people that were on in this group with me when we had this out-of-body experience. So I just wanted to read a couple of quotes just to give people an idea of what I've found to date. And so one guy called Amadeus said, well, Luxor was a particularly strange one for me, in a good way. I felt, more than any other site, that it contained its own energy. While we were in there, I felt very disconnected from the outside, even knowing how busy it was right outside. This culminated in the group meditation we had in the heart of the temple. I felt very much like almost I'd gone through a cave system and that the experience I had while meditating was the secret to be found deep inside. And then my other good friend Petra said, having walked barefoot with my friend Gary on these sacred grounds, not knowing about the idea of Shwala de Lubitz, which your previous guest John Anthony West talks a lot about, not knowing about Schwaller's idea of sacred architecture and the perfect man in the temple at this time, I gathered there with our small group of a handful of wonderful and spiritually open people with the intention of doing a short meditation. We sat down in the circle without much hesitating, and it seemed everybody knew where his exact place was, and within less than microseconds I felt literally catapulted out of my body, flowing into the wide light and heavenly realm of another dimension, feeling like paradise and being connected with everything what is, was, and ever will be, just bliss. Consciousness returning back to where it is infinitely free and where its true home is, infinity. Peacefulness, love, a state of being you never want to leave again. But it was not the first time that I've experienced this mind-blowing state of existence. It has already happened in a similar way before. For example, when lying in the resonance box in the King's Chamber of the Great Pyramid for the first time in my life. Maybe you could also call it a cosmic orgasm in a non-physical way, when all becomes one in the highest sense we can be aware of. To my opinion, the purpose and ability of ancient sacred sites and incarnated sacred men and women all over the world is to support the human soul to gain higher reconnection and insights, when being approached in a humble and unexpected loving and grateful attitude, in order to make them learn and understand that love is all that is. Having been blessed with this experience, life will never be the same as before. Petra. And that was basically where I went to as well. And it was just the most empowering feeling, being connected into something suddenly greater than the individual state of consciousness. So from that point onwards, there's kind of two ways of gaining information that I'm aware of. There's the book learning and listening way of obtaining information, and then there's the way that some of the great minds have obviously accessed information, like Einstein and Tesla, and that's from a place of knowing. You know something to be true, and that's where we can get back to. So some of these systems, like yoga, chanting, mantras, acupuncture, because they're always trying to work out, well, how do they know where all the acupuncture points are on the body without knowing the interconnectedness of each part of the body? Well, from my understanding, somebody must have connected into this place of knowing the deep truth. And they've got a sort of download, you could call it, or had an epiphany and a clear insight to how the body's all interconnected. So if you put a pin in the bottom of the foot, it's going to relieve pressure in somebody's head because the meridian goes all the way up the body. So when you're in this place of knowing, it's just an incredibly powerful feeling. And it's not something that you're sort of there for ages, but it is something that you can get to and get an insight about and a feeling.
And it's something beyond words. and time and space and all of that. It's just an experience you have to have.
And what I gathered from this experience was, if your listeners have watched a Star Trek program called Star Trek Deep Space Nine, in that there was a race of beings called the Changelings.
Mm-hmm.
And what they would do is they would morph into human form, interact with the Star Trek crew. They'd go back to their home planet, and then they dissolved into this sea of their people. So it was like an ocean of people, but they still had an individuality in that ocean. And that's what this experience was like for me. I was my consciousness out of my body in a sea of consciousness, aware of myself and aware of all that is, or as much of it as I could be capable of seeing at the time. And the feeling of bliss and unconditional love, I mean, if I just think about it, it makes me want to get a bit teary-eyed, because it was such a powerful feeling. So am I concerned about death? No, because I know that's where we return to. I had this, it had a familiar feeling. It wasn't the first time that I'd been there. That was the first thing. One of the first things that I picked up on. And I also got the impression that this is where my consciousness is going to return to after mission planet Earth. So it's taken a lot of fear away, because why do I need to be worried if I'm going to go back to this kind of unconditional place of love? But at the same time, I'm not in any rush to get back to there, because I've come down here to accomplish something, as we all have, and I would like to try and do my best to accomplish that mission. Because if I just go back there now, I get probably returned here, reset in a new body, you could say. And then I've got to try and do all the work of getting back to this point I'm at now, and then even more. So I wouldn't encourage anyone to try and get back there before the time. But but when it happens, it's a very nice feeling. And what actually happened for me was, I was, when I kind of arrived there, I had this clear insight about how our energy body is weighed down in various different ways, and that we need to kind of keep working on clearing the energy body to affect our state of vibration and consciousness, and opening up our path in life to greater potentials. Because if I'm going to go out of body, I want to come back with something decent. I mean, I'm not just going out of body for the sake of it. So I do think I've brought something back to help with my research, and I'm now looking into the various different ways that it can be shared with others.
Well, sure. And then when you go out of body, there's also other entities maybe that you can meet, other planes that you can see, lots that you can learn, maybe even work that you can do that's going to manifest here on a physical level.
Yeah, certainly possible. But this was just pure consciousness, beyond what I would say a sort of entity separateness. There was just a whole level of consciousness that I was part of.
So oneness, that it's a oneness that you're experiencing. But do you think that's even possible on Earth, or do you think it could be detrimental to people who are awake? Because there's a lot of people here I definitely would not want to be one with. I don't want to share some of their nightmares and their yucky unresolved stuff. So what do you think about that?
It's a good question, but the oneness, I think, happens when you manage to get yourself into a more open way of being and start to resolve some of the issues that you're probably referring to there. So the people that would be more likely to connect with each other, sort of say telepathically, are the ones that have already done the inner work, because that's what we're really talking about, working on ourselves to become more empowered, stop being held back by the sort of old system that says, oh, you must have this sort of education to run your own business, or you must have done this studying for all your life. Well, actually, if people have got a genuine passion for something and they research it in their own time, I think some of those people are as equally entitled to be doing things than people with solid educations just in one area. If it's something that you love doing, then definitely encourage people to find their way. So I don't think we have to worry about connecting to people, which I call it a different vibration. We just need to try and reach as many people as possible and get into this more loving place, you could call it, or certainly a place where we put others first, or where we think about others rather than just ourselves.
Well, the service to others thing, this is a big issue, because at what point does service to others stop being something beautiful and becomes abusive? Because I personally have seen in this alternative research realm, seen people who complain when an author charges for a book or their lecture or a website. They complain and say, you can't charge for the truth, but they don't understand how much goes into it and how much that person has to spend and devote their time. But meanwhile, they'll just take and take and take from that person and not give anything back. And they have no problem complaining.
Well, there is a big, well, there's certainly a group of people that think that everything should be free and that's the way to solve the world's problems. But that isn't a practical approach. I mean, if my clients didn't charge anything for their books, how are they going to afford to pay for their house and the research that they need to do to write another?
You're shooting the messenger, you know, choking the messenger. Give me the truth. You know, it's like, geez.
My philosophy on that one, or understanding that I've come to, is that the old system, the way of being, is built on greed. So we're taking too many fish out of the ocean quicker than the planet can replace them. And we're trying to get too much for our efforts. What's the price that people will pay is the kind of thing. And then you push the price up of something as much as possible. That's greedy. So the new system that I'm trying to work from my company is, I'm entitled to something for my efforts, but don't be greedy. And in fact, is there a way that people that are on have a lower income, can we offer those people a discount for conferences? Because I quite like discounted tickets for conferences. And so it's an inclusive system. And in fact, there was a coffee shop and sandwich bar in Oregon that we went to, and I thought it was rather good. So it had a suggested price, but you could pay whatever you wanted for a food and coffee.
Was this in Eugene by any chance?
Oh, couldn't. I think it was actually in Portland.
Oh, okay. That's where I was born.
Yeah. And Nate, James Gilland's producer, and I were rather impressed. And also they gave a lot of the food that was left over at the end of the day, I think either to homeless people or people that were having a very hard time. So if you know that you're earning lots of money, if you went into that shop and you're of a good spirit, you pay more than the average price. That's the system. If you're a kind of average wage earner, pay the suggested price. And if you're really having a bit of a hard time and you genuinely know you are, then you can pay less than the suggested price. So I think that's more of the system that's realistic. But it does count on people being honest.
Yeah. The other thing is, my dad always told me, if everyone gives, everyone gets. But unfortunately, not everyone gives.
No, but...
And I don't mean giving also financially, but maybe if there's some authors that you really respect or, you know, I don't know, musicians even, and the show is for free. It's about sending them good energy, good thoughts. You know, that's also a transaction.
Yeah, well, one of the first things that I learned was that if you do reach out to your favourite authors in the alternative world, you're more likely to get a reply. So if you've got questions about their research or you want to compliment them on how they've helped you, they want to hear about it because it helps them know that they're on the right tracks and what they're doing's valid, so you can give in that way. And giving emotionally, financially, all the different ways, don't look at it from the kind of short-sighted perspective. So if you're giving a lot of love to one person and they don't understand, and so you feel hurt by it, so then you sort of shut down. But if you give in the right way and do that, then that love will be returned to you from other people. there's a sort of grander cycle, and it's connected to karma, I would say. But it is important to do things from a practical perspective. And as you become more aware, it does become easier to judge who the people that we want to surround ourselves that are good impacts on our life. Because if we surround ourselves with the right people, with the right attitudes, it does make life a lot easier and a lot more fun. So we really need to work out who's good for us, and who's having a bit of a sort of detrimental effect, or perhaps making us feel down.
That's right. And any parasites that come along, it's about being good about recognizing it, ignoring it, and letting it go.
And perhaps trying to help them in a way that you can. I mean, I don't close the door on anyone. And you, of course, as you work in these areas, it's not good enough just to get yourself into a place where you're happy. Once you start to see how the world works in a more positive light, because I believe it is a benevolent universe and everything's there for us once we realize. So that would be my advice.
So as we end, can you share some of your experiences in the King's Chamber?
Yes, I'd be happy to. So I should say quickly that my kind of approach to things is take myself to these ancient sites and try and see what I can actually experience at them, because I'm looking into the experiential side, because there's so many different theories about the Great Pyramid. And it's like, well, what actually happens when we go inside the Great Pyramid? So I've been in there about a dozen times now, and I'm lucky enough to have got friendly with Patricia and Yusuf Awan that live just near the Sphinx in Cairo, and that's who I'm going to be hosting some tours with next year. And so when I was inside the King's Chamber, the first thing that Yusuf said to me was the sarcophagus, which is known as the granite box. He said, don't call it a sarcophagus, call it a resonance box. This is a device that's connected with sound. I was like, ah. And I'd learned this technique when I was in one of my yoga classes, because a lot of my research is around combining the ancient wisdom that survived in texts in India and the East. What can I learn from those understandings that actually I can use when I'm at sacred sites in Egypt and at other places? And so I'd learned this technique of toning, because there's a very particular technique to resonating the body. If you like to om, it's really about getting the whole body vibrating. It's not just about creating a sound in your throat. That's my understanding. And I'd learned this technique where if I was toning, the whole of my the sort of along the length of my spine up into my head and the top of my mouth had started to vibrate when I was creating this sound in my stomach or base chakra area. And when it happened in the yoga class, I thought, wow, that's an interesting feeling. I wonder what that means. And I went up and asked a yoga teacher, and she didn't really know much about it. So when I found myself in this resonance box in the King's Chamber, I thought back to that experience that I'd had in the yoga class and wondered what happens if I combine resonating my whole body inside this box inside the King's Chamber. And so I recreated the sound, and what happened was the whole of the King's Chamber started to vibrate in sympathy with the sound I was making. And so we've just had some amazing experiences in there. The main thing to say is you enter the Great Pyramid in one state of consciousness, and if you're going to use sound or meditate in there, you leave feeling completely different. And Yusuf and I, the first time we went in this year, when we came out, we felt like we could actually float off of the ground because the sound had cleansed our bodies.
Sounds like a giant tuning fork.
Yes. Yeah, but if your listeners have ever gone to a gong bath or used sound bowls.
Yes.
The sound that's kicked off of those is also very capable of cleansing the body.
Oh, it's incredible. It's one of my favorite things, actually.
So this is something that everybody's, you can tone at home and see how you feel. I'd certainly suggest toning outside in the garden or nature. That's my favorite spot. But you can find somebody that does a gong bath, be surrounded by these huge gongs that they beat, and it's called sound healing. So these are techniques that are known about. And from my experiences inside the Great Pyramid, it's basically a huge sound healing chamber. It's certainly one part of its function that allows you to connect with a deeper part of yourself. And should that really surprise us, the last ancient wonder of the world, something that calls millions of people to it. I mean, people, I book them in on the tours, they are called to Egypt. I could feel it and hear it for a lot of years. I knew that I was going to Egypt, and it's certainly helping me to get more in touch with myself. So that's my kind of take on it. And you can experiment with sound. You can feel the sound waves in the King's Chamber, work out different techniques that affect your level of awareness, and then you can take those techniques to other sites, temples. And in fact, it's got to the point now where I've started to see ancient sites around the world are tuned in with a sound connection. I found this amazing place in Peru when I went there with Brian Forster, who Henrik's interviewed. There's a site called Moray that your listeners can look up on Google Images. I'd suggest looking for the aerial photographs, these huge concentric circles. And I've even found a dolmen structure that's near in the Stonehenge Avebury landscape that's got a head-shaped hole that you can put your whole head in, and it's almost like a megalithic helmet. And that was one of my recent discoveries. And so when I've toned inside there, I've had a very strange experience where I actually saw like an energy coming out of my mouth because I had this crystalline sandstone resonating around my head is the only conclusion I can come to how I saw something like that. But these are, yeah, deep, profound experiences, and you connect to something greater than you, and it's very empowering.
It's original rock and roll, huh?
Oh, yeah. And I think Yusuf put it the best way, because we were watching people coming in and out of the King's Chamber, and because it's basically an empty room with a box in it. So we were watching these people coming in and out, and he said, this room, it can be nothing. If you've not got your state of awareness and consciousness into a place where you're getting a thing from it, it doesn't give you the hit or epiphanies. But if you are working on yourself and you go in there, it could be everything, because you could be connected into this place of knowing and all that is. And I think that's my best explanation for what it means to me.
Well, let's hear this audio clip. What do you say?
Yes, I certainly recommend your listeners to have it on big speakers if they have it, have them with the bass turned up, because there's a feedback or kind of reverb effect in the King's Chamber, and that's what really, when you're inside, it affects you on a very tangible level. So you don't just want it on small speakers for the best effect.
Here it is. Thank you, Gary. Let me pick your brain today. I know it's much easier just asking the questions instead of giving the answers.
That's my pleasure. Well, I hope I gave your listeners something to think about.
I think you did. Did you want to let us know about your websites or any events that you'd like to promote, or books, anything?
Yeah. Well, as the PR man, I really should say something. I was be failing in my duties. But yeah, I'm working on lots of conference promotions in the UK and US. You've been good enough to support the conference on the front page of your website that's in London, the Conference for Consciousness and Human Evolution, and that's at the end of August. And the organizer's a fantastic guy, and he's doing a lot of good. So I'd certainly recommend your listeners checking that one out. I've got lots of tours I'm going to be co-hosting with many of my various clients coming up. So if listeners would like to look at my new website, which is just being constructed, and that's infinite-connections.co.uk, and they can already sign up to my mailing list on there, or join my Facebook group, Infinite Connections PR, for all the latest interviews, magazine, tours, conference promotions. I think I'm working on about 20 conferences, 20 tours around the world at the moment, so it's quite busy. Good stuff.
Well, excellent. So thank you, Gary. And to all you listening, thanks for spending your time with us.
It was my pleasure.
Everyone, be sure to take a moment every day to remember who you really are and why you really came to this construct, because there's more to life than what meets the eye. We'll leave you today with a song Gary chose called Miracle by Ocean Lab. Enjoy your day, afternoon, or evening.
Borrowed, and it's too